just beneath his master necromancer's pin. He rubs it absently. "What happened there?" I ask.
"Your friend Valoria spilled her breakfast on me,"
he grins, shaking his head.
"I've never seen someone jump that much at a simple hello."
"And in other news,"
Simeon cuts in, his voice rough from lack of sleep,
"Daniel might be moving back to Osley thanks to our recent foray into the Deadlands."
"What?" I put an arm around his shoulders.
"After all that's happened, he thinks it's too dangerous."
Simeon rolls his eyes, but the gesture does nothing to hide his pain. "I told him about rescuing Evander's sister, and he told me to leave the Shadebaiter to you and Jax. He said if I don't, I might lose him for good."
Jax spits on the polished tile floor, showing exactly what he thinks of that.
"I shouldn't have asked you to come," I say quickly. "I knew Daniel was scared for you. I knew he didn't want you going to the Deadlands, but you did the right thing. I won't abandon my family, not even for the handsomest face in Carvia."
With a great shuddering breath, he seems to bury his misery deep and return to his usual good-natured self.
"So, are we going to stand around discussing our feelings all day? Or do you want to go get your sword and join us, sister?"
"You both realize Vane is probably hiding in the Deadlands somewhere, right?"
As I say it, both Jax and Simeon frown slightly, and I relent.
"We can check the ashes first, though. I'll be quick," I promise as I spin around and run back to my room. I grab my sword off the desk, and right as I pull it from its scabbard to check it over from yesterday's fight, someone knocks briskly at the door.
"Simeon, I said I'd be right back."
But the knock comes again. Merity Crowther is in my doorway, wearing Evander's smile, holding out a bunch of fiery poppies whose bright petals mean consolation.
"Thank you,"
she says tersely as she steps past me, entering my room again without invitation,
"for saving my life."
She thrusts the flowers at me, and I take them with my free hand, studying her over the poppies. She looks almost as pale as she did when she was bleeding from the Shadebaiter's attack, but her wounds are healed, and her hair is braided into a neat crown.
"These are nice," I mutter, bringing the flowers to my nose.
"Really, thanks." It took courage to come here after the things we said to each other. I'll give her that. But I have no idea why she's still standing here, looking at me expectantly.
"So, are you staying in Grenweir City for..."
I feel something scurry over my hand. Several somethings. A shiny black bug drops from the bouquet onto my boot, and I stifle the urge to shout as I stamp on it. But when another bug crawls up my arm, I curse and throw the flowers across the room. A stalk of deep purple foxglove, the symbol of insincerity, falls from the middle of the bouquet.
"Death be damned, these are infested! Where'd you find them? A dung heap?"
Merity's face flushes as she stamps on every bug she spots.
"So burn them," she mutters. "I wouldn't have come here at all if my mother hadn't dragged me the whole way and insisted I thank you."
"If you ask me, you don't deserve any thanks. I wish you'd left me there to die."
She squishes the last bug, then frowns at me. For some reason, the sight makes my temples throb.
Merity's pale skin turns mottled gray. Her arms grow long and skeletal. Peeling, decaying flesh bubbles on her cheeks, and her mouth, opening in surprise, is full of sharp teeth. I shut my eyes and lean against the wall of my room,
willing the hallucination to stop. But when I crack an eye open, Shade Merity is still standing there, watching me with dark holes for eyes, snarling with her jaw unhinged and her pointy teeth exposed, looking hungry.
Odessa?
Her usually cool voice is tinged with concern despite her vicious appearance.
What's going on?
Monster, I grit out, keeping my eyes shut tight. My whole skull hurts worse than it did the time Simeon and I rolled down a giant hill and he accidentally kicked me in the back of the head.
What did you just call me?
Merity's too sharp voice crashes into my aching head.
No, I mean, because I won't tell her about the potions.
I can't.
You don't get to judge me for trying to bring Thyriel back when I didn't know she'd refuse to come. How could I have known that, after all the things we promised each other?
A sob escapes her.
I never should have come here.
She slams the door behind her, and the moment her rapid footsteps in the hallway fade, I crawl toward the stash of calming potions under my bed. With the bitter liquid trickling down my throat, the pain in my head starts to recede, and I can see the trampled flowers on the floor clearly again. I doubt Merity will ever come back here, and I'm glad. I don't want anyone to see me like this, especially not her, a girl who's lost more than I have. Evander wouldn't recognize me right now, and that alone makes me wish I could stop needing the potion. But I'm even more afraid of what I'll feel without it. I'm afraid of so many things, like a rogue necromancer who can control shades. After what I witnessed when I rescued Merity, I wonder if Evander's death, or Master Nicanor's, or the random violent acts of a shade. I wonder if their killer had a master and was following orders. A rogue necromancer guiding the giant shade and feeding it corpses would explain why it was so much stronger than the usual monsters lurking in the Deadlands.
Sparrow?
Simeon's voice cuts into my thoughts, carrying from the hallway through the closed door.
We just saw Merity come out of your room, and she looked madder than a wet cat. Is everything all right?
I push myself up off the floor and run my fingers through my hair, trying to look more like myself. I don't need anyone realizing I haven't stopped taking the calming potions.
Everything's fine.
I lie.
Let's get this over with.
The morning after our unsuccessful search in the ashes, the faint sound of smashing glass draws me from a restless sleep. I open my eyes to a misty autumn morning and gaze around my empty room, where the piles of clothes and my sword are exactly as I left them. I must have imagined the noise. After closing my eyes for another moment and realizing sleep won't return, I wonder whether I'll need 3 or 4 potions to help me out of bed this morning. But when I try to push back my blankets, my hands won't cooperate. And I glance down to see they're bound in iron. I blink, struggling to make sense of things. The heavy shackles on my wrists look like the ones reserved for the most violent lawbreakers. My mind jumps to Vayne, the powerful rogue necromancer. But I can't imagine how he got through the palace guards and figured out which room was mine. And if he wanted to tie me up and hurt me, he wouldn't have left me cozily tucked in bed. There's only one thing I know for certain right now. I've got to get to the hallway and call for help before whoever did this returns. Heart tapping out a mad beat,
I stagger from my bed with the sheets wrapped around my ankles and trip as I reach the edge of my tether. I'm chained to my own bedpost. I try to catch myself, but I'm not quick enough. I land hard on my back, knocking the breath out of me. Still, whatever bruises I've just given myself don't sting nearly as badly as the sight beneath my bed. All my calming potions are gone. The once sticky floorboards where they sat are clean and dry, as though the potions were never there at all. My scream of frustration doesn't feel as good as I hoped it might. "Oh, good," says a cool, slightly bored voice I never thought I'd hear again. My door creaks open, and the voice grows louder. "You're awake. How's your head today?" As Merity sweeps into the room, my face burns. I struggle to push myself up from the floor, not wanting to give her the satisfaction of towering over me while I'm sprawled on my back, helpless as a fish out of water. "What is this? Some kind of revenge?" I growl, holding up my shackled hands. The chain binding me to the bed rattles as I push myself to my feet and glare at Merity. "You realize I can still hurt you with my hands chained, right?" Her lips twitch, but she quickly forces her face into its usual smooth mask. "I don't see why you'd want to, when I'm here to help you. Besides, your hands aren't bound for my protection." Merity takes a deep breath. "Your potions are gone, and you'll be tied up and locked in this room for the next 7 days, with the exception of necessities." She pauses, her eyes searching my stunned face. "That's how long the healers say it takes for the potion to leave your blood entirely and stop the cravings." Do you have any idea how much those tonics cost?" I'm so furious I can barely form words. "Or how much I need them." I may not want to kill her, but I would like to slap her. Really, really hard. "Look, you know what Evander meant to me, so you should understand better than anyone why I need this one thing." I edge as close to Merity as my blasted tether allows. "Without the potion, I'll be
alive and miserable," Merity finishes. A flash of triumph lights her eyes. "Like me. I realized it when I got home yesterday. There's no better way to repay what you did than by giving you exactly what you gave me. Life. When I wanted to die. Did you know that if you were to keep taking that potion, it would eventually kill you?"
I press my lips together, a trickle of cold snaking down my back. I didn't know that, but even if she's telling the truth, it's none of her business. "If you really wanted to die," I mutter out of spite, "you wouldn't be here talking to me." To my satisfaction, her lips open, but no sound comes out. She gives a terse nod.
"I could say the same of you," she murmurs at last, her voice crisp as winter's first frost. "You're drinking far too much of that potion for someone who plainly isn't ready to give up on life, no matter what wretched things it's forced on you lately." My voice, unlike hers, crackles with heat. "Why do you care anyway?" Merity's face reveals nothing, even when it's so close her nose is almost touching mine. "Misery loves company. And Evander would turn over in his grave if I let you keep destroying yourself." "How did you even know about the potions?"
She glances away toward the window.
Your friend is really worried about you.
And after your bizarre episode yesterday, I was curious.
She shrugs.
Wondering about you beats dwelling on my own problems.
Valoria.
I'll pay you. I hate the whine in my voice. But a feeling like hundreds of tiny insects crawling around in my stomach means it's past time for my next fix. You can have anything of mine you want. My uniforms, my party gowns, my sword, my sapphire pin. Just bring my potions back.
Not a chance. Merity perches on the bed, leaving the path to the door wide open.
But there's no point even trying to sprint to freedom. I can't drag the whole bed with me. As I glare at the open door, Valoria breezes into the room, looking completely unsurprised by my livid stare.
Good morning,
she says cheerfully, pushing her glasses up her nose and kicking the door shut. Turning back, she offers me a hesitant smile I don't return.
How are you feeling?
It's a good thing your potion makes you sleep so soundly, or I'd never have gotten those shackles on without you knowing.
Are they too tight? I designed them with your comfort in mind.
I pressed my lips together to hold in a groan. Of course this was your idea. The princess shakes her head.
Merity's. But I wish I'd thought of it days ago.
I can't believe this is happening. I'd pinch myself to see if I'm dreaming, but I can't move my hands. And with each passing moment, what little patience I have is fading. Valoria, take these off right now, I demand through gritted teeth. I have no chance of finding your mother if I'm locked up. When she doesn't show any sign of relenting, I lower my voice to a hushed calm.
Fine, you win.
I'll never touch a drop of that potion again. But Jax and Simeon need my help tracking down the missing dead and a very dangerous man who's already tried to feed at least one person to a shade. A man who's apparently quite good at hiding, if yesterday's search is any indication.
Jax and Simeon know what we're doing here, and we have their support.
Valoria leans closer, frowning down her nose at me.
They don't want you going back to the Deadlands or anywhere else until you have a clear head and aren't a few potions away from death.
I try to ball my hands into fists, but of course I can't. Instead, I give Valoria my widest, most pleading eyes. Of my two captors, she's the one I'm sure has a heart. The one I know how to wound with words.
Please, Highness, there's no time for this now.
Oh, but there is, Master Necromancer.
Valoria squares her shoulders and stands taller, looking every bit like the leader I know she could be. I just wish she wasn't directing her fiercest stare at me, forcing me to glower back.
Do you have any idea what this is doing to us? Your friends? You'll be more of a danger than a help to Jax and Simeon if you keep drinking that potion. Grenweir needs you.
Her gaze and voice soften as she adds,
I need you. The real you. Not the one who's been spending half her time in an imaginary world of monsters.
Merity's words are so quiet, I almost miss them.
There are enough real monsters in Cardia to keep you busy if you just look around.
I exchange a glance with her, wondering if she's thinking of yesterday's rogue necromancers. She smiles wanly, and a flickering image of Evander hits me like a knife in the gut. I turn my back on her,
focusing all my attention on the princess. Merity obviously wants to see me suffer. The shaking in my hands spreads to my knees, but I'd rather fight to keep standing than sit on the bed beside her. That much I understand, but Valoria, why are you doing this to me?
You brought me out of my tower. You helped me realize I have a voice, however small, that deserves to be heard.
The princess puts her arms around me, hugging my rigid back and filling me with unexpected warmth.
And now I want to lead you out of the darkness.
What if the darkness is where I belong? I fight to keep my voice steady as I think of all the times I walked the palace halls with Evander, when my biggest worry was how to convince him we should move there. What if I spend every potion-free day wishing I'd died in the Deadlands with him? What if the pain of being alone is too much? An image of Master Simbri's face as she pulled me from the flames in a faraway field flashes to mind, nodding my stomach with guilt.
You won't wish that, Valoria squeezes my shoulder, because you won't be alone. You'll have me, and we'll fight the pain and the darkness together.
I open my mouth to ask her how I can fight anything with my hands chained. But my knees buckle and I sway. Frowning, Valoria steadies me, then pushes me gently down onto the bed. Resigned to my fate, I sink onto my unmade sheets. When I wake up sometime later, Merity is gone. For a while, as the sun makes its ascent in a clear blue sky, I watch Valoria as she sits by my feet, scribbling in a leather-bound notebook of yellowed parchment. What are you working on? I manage to ask. Beads of sweat collect on my forehead. But when Valoria pours me a glass of water, I'm too nauseated to drink. Valoria makes a soft, disapproving sound, but she doesn't force the issue. Instead, she holds up her notebook.
This is my air balloon.
She taps the drawing at the center of the spread pages. A giant, loopy thing with strings coming out of the bottom, and what looks like a large basket dangling from the strings.
Fire should make the balloon rise, but I've got to figure out how to contain the flames so they won't burn the people sitting in the basket. A flying balloon could be a new way to travel.
I lick sweat from my lips and surprise myself by laughing. The image of several dead looking on in awe and fear as Valoria ascends into the sky in a flaming balloon is just too much. Where do you come up with these things? What is it your sight shows you that inspires you to want to, well, fly? Valoria's cheeks turned rosy pink.
They're not all my ideas. I found the air balloon and several other designs for flying machines in a book. There's a section of the palace library that used to hold books from before Eldest Grandfather's second reign began. Books full of all sorts of ideas people started but never got a chance to finish.
She tries to push her glasses up the bridge of her nose, though they're already in place.
He thinks all those books were burned, but I saved as many as I could in my tower. When I read them, I see ways to improve the designs. There's just the matter of getting a chance to try.
I smile, leaning back against my pillows, and wondering what Evander would think of a flying balloon. He'd probably volunteer to be Valoria's first victim, passenger. I bet he'd consider it an exciting way to see what lies beyond Carthia's borders. Maybe someday, I can sail the skies for him, even if the thought terrifies me.
Why don't we take your air balloon down to the beach one night?
I gasp between shaky breaths.
I'm sweating so hard now. My blankets cling to me like a second skin. Where the dead won't see it. Maybe we can get it working. Valoria's expression shifts from one of shock and gratitude to complete horror as I start to convulse.
Have some water,
Valoria says meekly, dropping her book to dab my sweaty face with a cool, damp cloth.
Evander,
I gasp as I writhe, unable to keep my traitorous body still. Without the potion, I won't see my perfect illusion of him anymore. And if I can't see him, over time, I'll forget what he looked like. Without the potion, I'll truly lose him. I can't see him, I sob as Valoria presses the cloth to my forehead. I can't. Moments later, my screams echo off the walls. Chapter 19. I don't know how much time has passed since I last opened my eyes, if it's been days or just a few hours, but the moon hangs low in my window like a curious spectator, and Valoria is nowhere to be seen. My throat is dry, my lips rough as old parchment. I'm thirsty, I croak to no one in particular. Would you like some goat's milk? Meredy asks, emerging from the shadows, dragging a chair toward my bedside. I've brought sage water as well. If you'd like, I could make coriander water instead. It's popular in Lorness. Every sound, from her voice to the chair scraping the wooden floor before it catches on my rug, hurts like someone is jabbing tiny knives into my ears. Stop talking, I beg, as she holds a slender glass bottle to my lips. I try to pretend she's not there as I drink down the sage water, but it's nearly impossible to avoid gazing into her eyes when she's so close. I focus on the scar across her cheek, the four jagged lines that must have come from a large paw. When I've finished with the water, my head is throbbing a little less. Why a grizzly bear? I ask. Meredy settles into the chair she brought over. What? Beastmasters choose the animal they study and bond with, don't they? They do. It helps to have a choice, because you wind up spending years in the wilderness with that animal. A rare smile lights Meredy's face. And for the first time, the resemblance to Evander doesn't hit me like a blow. Perhaps because my body's too exhausted to ache any more than it already does. I grew up watching Elabeth and her greyhounds. She was always bragging about how amazing their connection was, and what majestic animals they were. Meredy continues, slipping further from her usual calm as her face darkens. It's not easy being the youngest of three siblings. Being the smallest often meant being overlooked. So when I learned I'd been selected to train as a beastmaster, I chose the most fearsome animal I could think of. Life hasn't been the same since I met Lysander. She bows her head. Hiding something, I'm sure. He's the one thing I've never regretted. Not even when he gave you that scar? Meredy raises her eyes to mine again as she touches her scarred cheek. Not even then. It's a good reminder that wild things can never truly be tamed. Only respected. I wiggle my fingers as they start tingling. But my gaze keeps wandering back to her curtain of dark red hair. Are you hungry? She asks, apparently mistaking my listless stare for something else.
I can send for something from the kitchens.
When I shake my head, she pulls a small sack from inside her cloak and tosses it toward me. Her face is unreadable, but I have the strangest feeling that she's pleased with herself.
You'll at least want these. Kasmira sends her regards.
The sack hits my leg and rattles as it falls onto the bed. I blink at Merity. I haven't given you enough credit, young beastmaster, I grit out. She purses her lips as I raise my bound hands. But how am I supposed to open them?
Oh, she leaps up and grabs the bag. Right.
Maybe it's a trick of the moonlight, but for a moment a hint of flush appears beneath her freckles. As the bag falls open, the wonderful aroma of coffee beans fills the room. Oh, how I've missed them. The calming potion had put my former addiction, well, out of mind. But now that they're being held to my lips by Merity's long, slender fingers, I don't know how I've gone without for so long. Her eyes hold mine. Their rich green is flecked with amber. She blinks slowly. I lean in and catch a coffee bean with my lips. Her breath hitches, and a slight flush rises in her face. This doesn't mean I like you all of a sudden, I tell her, or that I ever will, after you've made me a prisoner in my own room. Her cheeks are still bright, but she says,
all right,
in her usual serene manner. I'll learn to live with myself somehow. My lower lip brushes her thumb as I take another coffee bean, and a shiver races through me. You should try one, I offer. Merity arches a brow.
Me? Eating illegal goods?
She sounds slightly out of breath at the thought. Figures she'd be that virtuous. A moment later, she pops one in her mouth and crunches down. Her eyes widen, and she smiles. A tremor suddenly grips me as my body clamors for something stronger. Something blue in a glass vial that left me comfortably numb. Something that could keep me floating above this swift, searing pain. How do you do it? I ask as Merity sponges my forehead with the cloth Valoria left. How do you handle thinking about Van and Ferial without falling apart? Her movements with the cloth are careful, her fingers never once grazing my skin.
I don't, she says after a while. I try not to think of them at all.
My smile is tight with pain. What do you think my potions were for? I try to laugh, but it sounds more like a groan. I wish I could be numb like you without them. I'll deny I ever said this when I'm better, if I get better, but you're strong, stronger than me. A wave of pain makes me arch my back, my hands curling in their shackles. Merity's eyes narrow in concern. She dabs fresh, cool water across my brow.
Thanks, but you're the stronger one. I wish I could let myself feel as much as you do without falling apart.
I shake my head. What do you call what I'm doing now? Her fingers slip over the edge of the cloth as her eyes meet mine. And clumsily, as if she's not quite aware of what she's doing, she smooths back my hair.
Surviving.
Her touch is the best thing I've felt in days, cool against my burning skin. I close my eyes, not wanting to startle her into realizing what she's doing for fear that she'll stop.
But when a vicious tremor grips me, my body screaming for the potion, there's nothing that can ease the pain. Tell me a story, I beg, as I writhe on my sweat-dampened quilt. After all, whatever dignity I once possessed is long gone. The happiest one you can think of.
Merity's eyes widen. For an agonizingly long moment, the only sound is my ragged breathing. At last, she says stiffly, "When I was 9, Evander squished my pet caterpillar by accident. I suppose he must have told you about it, because the first time I met you, you brought me a whole jar full of them. Green ones, black and yellow ones, and a huge white one. You named it Pearl, remember?" Some expression flickers across her face. Amusement? But fades as her voice becomes a whisper. "You looked like a princess that day, standing on the manor step with mud on your boots and leaves in your hair, and all those caterpillars you'd found for me. I remember thinking, I'd never met anyone as in love with the world around us as I was, until you." I can't answer. Not with the pain stealing my breath. But I'm sure I return her smile for a moment before the darkness pulls me under. I'm losing track of the days. Or I was, until earlier this morning when Valoria gave me a piece of charcoal to make a slash on the wall for each potion-free night I survive. Now I draw my 6th mark above the bed, then munch on a piece of dry bread as Valoria frantically scribbles something in another notebook. "Working on the air balloon?" I rasp. Aside from my dry throat and a dull headache, the potion's absence hasn't made me want to leap off a cliff or brought any fresh nightmares of Evander's final moments in the last few days, much to my surprise.
No, Valoria murmurs. It's a wonder she's talking to me at all after the names I called her and Merity during the worst of my potion withdrawals. Even yesterday, my body faintly shook through most of the day and night. But this morning, as I curl and uncurl my hands, checking for any hint of trembling, I mostly feel tired. Worn, like the leather of my necromancer's belt. And restless. I'm ready to rejoin the world beyond my window. But Valoria insists we wait the full 7 days, which means one more day at her mercy. At least they finally removed the shackles so that I can feed myself again. Although it's clear that if I try to make a run for the apothecary, Lysander will stop me cold. The sun slowly climbs higher in the sky as Valoria's quill scratches the page. "Have Jax and Simeon been by again?" I ask, interrupting her scrawling. "They've come to see me every day, and each time I've had Merity and Lysander turn them away. I don't want anyone else witnessing my humiliation. But now, I'm feeling ready to face them." According to Valoria, they still haven't found any trace of Vane. But people in the Ashes certainly know him by reputation. It's only a matter of time before Jax finds someone he can bribe or intimidate into giving up the rogue's whereabouts. But if he hasn't made progress by tomorrow, I'm taking over. I'd use Lysander to track the man's scent, which should still be on Merity's bloody cloak. Jax and Simeon didn't want to borrow the bear on their own, knowing the damage he could cause if he got loose in the Ashes. He may be the most civil bear in existence, but there's wildness in his blood. Valoria rubs her eyes, drawing my gaze back to her. She always looks tired, her stare vacant, like she's been up all night working on something or other. But I've never seen her like this, fighting back a yawn every few moments and staring at the same page in her notebook for an hour at a time. Her mother is still missing. Every search for the nobles who vanished on the night of Hadrian's party has ended the same way. There's no sign of what happened to any of them, though everyone agrees they were dressed for the celebration when they disappeared. All King Wilding has done is increase security. Even Valoria and I are out of ideas as to where to look or who would have kidnapped a random assortment of dead nobles and dignitaries without demanding a ransom. "Here," she says suddenly, holding out a torn page from her notebook. Her voice quivers slightly. "So you can see him whenever you like." I struggle to form words as I run my fingers delicately over the page, careful not to smudge the likeness of Evander grinning up at me. She even remembered the little scar above his eyebrow. "This is incredible, Valoria. Thank you."
"It was nothing," Valoria insists, her cheeks coloring.
But we both know that's not true. By the time I finish tacking the drawing on the wall above my bed, the princess is already immersed in another work of art. Waving doesn't get her attention, so I cross to her chair by the window. She doesn't seem to notice until I lean forward, blocking the light. Gasping, she closes the notebook with a snap. But not before I see the painstakingly detailed illustration on the back page. "That's a very handsome drawing." I try and fail to hide a grin as I plop down on the rug by her feet. "Jax will be thrilled when you show him." Valoria shakes her head, her face turning tomato red.
"I'm not going to show him," she squeaks. I draw people whenever I need a break from my work."
"Oh, who else?" I make a grab for the notebook. I know it's not nice, and I know she only locked me in here for the past 6 days for my own good, but I can't resist the urge. I want to see her squirm a little. "Come on," I beg as Valoria clutches the notebook to her chest. "We're friends. You can show me." The princess purses her lips and grips the notebook tighter than ever.
"Try to touch this book again, and I'll feed it to Lysander. I swear I will."
"Fine, fine." I hold up my hands, wincing as something tightens in my chest. "But when it comes to Jax, there are a few things you'll want to know. Ask him what his tattoos mean. All 12 of them." Valoria opens her mouth to say something, but I continue softly. "Ask him about how he believes he's going to die, all because of some dream about ice. Ask him why he's afraid of the sea. Cook him the spiciest dish you can find. And when he starts to panic that you're getting under his skin, be patient with him."
"Odessa,"
Valoria says slowly, the color fading from her cheeks,
"how close are you and Jax exactly?"
"He's like a brother to me," I say firmly, as Merity bursts into the room, bringing the scents of wood smoke, crisp leaves, and cider.
"Morning, all," she says coolly.
"Merity,"
Valoria murmurs, trying to recover herself.
"You're just in time. I was about to see if Sparrow wanted a bath. Why don't you accompany her?"
The princess doesn't even get her last words out as Merity and I both say no. Valoria arches her brows, looking between us. My face burns, though I've no idea why.
Merity gazes out the window, avoiding us both.
Sparrow!
A call through the door breaks the heavy silence. The speaker sounds far away, like someone doesn't want to get too close to Lysander.
Prince Hadrian requests your presence in the throne room.
Merity turns her intense eyes to the door.
Tell him she'll come find him tomorrow, when she's feeling completely better, she shouts in answer.
It's an order, the speaker says sternly. All the necromancers are being summoned.
There's a pause, a sigh, and then...
King Wilding is missing.
Chapter 20. The guard who delivered Hadrian's summons accompanies me down the hall to the throne room at the heart of the palace. He has a round, young face I don't recognize, and perhaps his youth and inexperience are to blame for the way he keeps a hand on my forearm like I'm some common criminal being brought for sentencing. Still, I'm not in the mood for this. Not after the past 6 days. I twist out of his grasp. Startled, he mutters an apology that I ignore. Valoria, Merity, and Lysander follow a short distance behind us. I'm sure they're wondering, like I am, how the king could vanish with all the extra guards stationed outside the palace's every door. Even if he left on his own, which is about as unlikely as the dead wanting to fly in an air balloon, someone would have seen him. Unless someone inside the palace is to blame for his disappearance. King Wilding loves his sprawling family almost as much as he loves Carthia. But Vaya knows the living and the dead alike can hold on to the smallest of grudges. As we trudge onward, Lysander's claws clicking against the bright tiled floor, guards press themselves against the wall to get out of his way. I turn the final corner to find the throne room doors besieged by a dark and restless sea of shrouded figures. It looks like 100 nobles or more, every dead person in the palace. They step to either side of the hall, clearing a path for me. Some say hello or wave, but one woman growls over the greetings.
We want you gone. Find a new home.
That's incredibly short-sighted of you, isn't it? Merity says coolly from somewhere behind me. How do you think you'll keep coming back to your jewels and power and titles without her magic? Stunned, I turn to thank her, but she isn't looking my way.
The necromancers can't be trusted, the angry dead woman shouts.
Despite the other dead trying to silence her, she raises her scratchy voice to add,
They bring us back to life, but they make us weak. Why can't they learn to raise us with our magic so we can defend ourselves from these attacks?
Swallowing hard, I shout back, That's not how our magic works. You'll have to take that up with Vaya. It's only one unhappy woman out of a huge crowd, but her words cut me to the core. In the past 7 years, I've speared many of these nobles on the end of my blade to save them from becoming monsters and losing their souls. I've anointed their bodies with milk, held their loved ones' hands as I guided them through the Deadlands, offered their hungry spirits my blood, and brought them back to Carthia. To life. As an orphan, I've never had a spirit waiting in the Deadlands for me, unless I count the very nobles now surrounding me. Not for the first time, I see why so few blue-eyed Carthians want my job.
You're not going anywhere, the angry dead woman steps in front of the closed throne room doors and spreads her arms,
blocking my way forward.
If you want what's best for us, as you always say you do, you should leave now and never return.
Move! Some of the other dead shout at her, but no one dares attempt to touch her. One wrong motion,
One accidental tug on her shroud or gloves, and we'll have a shade loose in the palace for a second time.
What's going on?
The princess sounds slightly out of breath as she catches up to me, having paused a ways back to say something to a guard Lysander startled. She pulls her glasses off, polishes them on her gown, then takes a fresh look at the gathering like she can't believe her eyes.
Why is that woman blocking the door? Uncle Ty?
She turns to one of the shrouded figures for an explanation.
Aunt Arasa?
She wants us gone from the palace. By us, I mean all the necromancers. I explain as the guard who brought us here tries to reason with the dead protester. He pats the sword at his side, but green as he is, even he should know better than to draw it. The rest of the dead are waiting for answers, I think, just like us. But how we're going to get them with her in the way?
Stand back, Merity says to the crowd of worried dead, calmly surveying the woman. We'll clear the way. She gazes deep into Lysander's eyes, and something unspoken passes between them. The bear's eyes glow emerald green as he walks steadily toward the throne room doors, careful not to step too near any of the other dead. I wince and reach instinctively for the blade that's usually at my side, thinking he's going to collide with the dead woman at the doors. But she darts away from him at the last moment like a startled crow. Merity and I almost exchange a smile. Then Valoria grabs our hands and pulls us in Lysander's wake, leaving the young guard to address the angry dead woman now shouting at him. As soon as we're in the throne room, two heavily armored guards bar the doors behind us, muffling the noise outside. Merity and Lysander hang back, but Valoria runs straight to Hadrian, who sits on the polished steps leading up to the massive throne piled high with bronze and blue velvet cushions.
Oh, Hadrian, the princess kneels beside him, throwing her arms around his neck. This is a nightmare. I know Eldest Grandfather isn't perfect, but he's our king, and we don't have a chance of finding him. We couldn't even find our own mother.
As Hadrian embraces his sister, I drag my feet toward them, trying to give them a moment alone, despite my burning questions. A shadow stirs behind the throne. The queen, recognizable only by the delicate crown of gold perched atop her shroud, surveys the cavernous room. Aside from Her Majesty, Hadrian, and several guards, we're alone in here. Jax and Simeon must be away, hunting that shade-baiter Vane, or they'd have answered Hadrian's summons. I wonder where Master Cimbri is. Hopefully with them and not still hiding from the world in her cottage. At least one of the dead is angry already, I say softly, climbing the steps to where Hadrian and Valoria sit. She wants the necromancers to leave the palace. And while I hope she'll be the last to suggest it, I somehow doubt that. Pausing a few steps below Hadrian, I face the queen and bow my head. Forgive me, Majesty. Her voice is bone dry and little more than a whisper.
Whatever for, Sparrow.
King Wilding? Heat rushes to my face as everyone looks my way. I haven't been feeling like myself lately. I should have done something more to find those missing people. As a guardian to the dead, I should have stayed by His Majesty at all.
That's not your job, Valoria says, her eyes flashing. You're not a soldier, and you're not a shepherd to the king. You can't blame yourself for any of this.
She leaps to her feet and stands beside me, linking her arm through mine.
It's out of your control, Sparrow.
I swallow hard. The shouts of the dead woman still ring in my ears. There has to be something I can do. I clench my hands at my sides, gazing up at the queen. Please tell me how I can help, Majesty. Her feeble voice is even harder to hear this time.
I don't know, Sparrow. It's difficult to say who's to blame. And until we know that, search parties are our only course of action.
I might know of someone, actually. Vane and his pet Shade flash to mind. Careful to leave Merity's name out of it. I describe my encounter with the Shade Baiter as Her Majesty, Valoria, and Hadrian listened raptly. I think he's been creating shades on purpose, which means he could be the one stealing our dead. Jax and Simeon are out looking for him. Of course, someone probably would have noticed him sneaking around the palace, so... I shrug, letting the words die. The idea sounded better in my head.
If this vain person is behind the kidnappings, he has no idea what's coming for him.
Hadrian rises, scrubbing a hand over his face. There's a shadow along his jaw, dark gold stubble that suggests he hasn't had time for his usual grooming routine.
Believe me, when we find whoever's behind this, we'll cut our problem off at the head. Quite literally.
He strides down the few steps between us, and for the first time, I notice a small red gash and a slight bruise beneath his eye. Reaching out with my free hand, I trace his swollen skin around the cut. What happened there? I murmur. Hadrian gently takes my hand and folds his fingers over mine.
It's nothing. I fell out of bed.
He bites his lip.
Rather embarrassing, isn't it? But Valoria is right, Sparrow. You can't blame yourself for what's happened to His Majesty. And rest assured, our best guards are scouring the area for him even as we speak. I'll have them search at once for the man you described, too, in case Jax and Simeon have yet to find him.
He nods to one of the guards at the back of the room, who hurries away. Glancing from Hadrian to the Queen, I search carefully for words. I can't just sit by while Carthia crumbles without its leader. I should join the search right away, too. I pause, as it pains me to admit it. I wasn't well enough before, but I'm up to it now. Where would I be most useful, Majesty?
Actually, I need your help with another equally important matter.
Hadrian squeezes my hand, drawing my attention back to him.
It's the reason I called you here. And while I regret that Jax and Simeon haven't arrived yet, we really can't delay any further.
My palm is slick with sweat in the prince's firm grip. I try to pull away, but he holds fast, refocusing his intense gaze on me. To my surprise, and everyone else's, judging by Valoria's soft intake of breath, Hadrian kneels before me.
Odessa of Grenwyr, I ask you now, will you be my serpent?
I barely hear him over the sound of my racing heart.
You're... what?
With his free hand, Hadrian pulls something from his pocket. A tiny gold pin shaped like a sword with two hissing snakes wrapped around the blade, facing each other.
Every king declares a serpent. A special soldier who answers only to him. Who carries out matters of the greatest importance for the crown. Even if following orders sometimes means doing things outside the law. King Wilding's serpent was Duke Nevet, but he went missing with my mother and the rest.
He bows his head, dropping his gaze to the floor in his grief, and taking a breath before raising his shining eyes to mine.
In the absence of Duke Nevet, I'm asking if you'll take on the role. It's the highest honor I can bestow. But I'll understand completely if, after all you've endured lately, you aren't up to the task.
My husband would approve.
The queen adds softly.
Young as you are, you're the best at what you do. You've been his favorite mage for some time, Sparrow.
With